Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 15th, 2003. Today's session is entitled Introduction to Francis and Claire of Assisi, Session 1 of Living in Right Relationship with Self, with Others, and with All of Creation, presented by Gloria Jost and Mary Jo Chavez, number JOG 2003. Let's listen in.
Wow. You can look at this two ways. If you pool all the information, we know a lot about St. Francis and Claire that maybe could be put into a thimble, huh? Oh, it's going to be fun to explore together and just learn and deepen our own understanding. Every time that I share about St. Francis and St. Claire, my own faith journey is deepened, as well as just understanding who they were in their own context, their historical context.
Okay, well, this class will be recorded, but we didn't record the introduction. So you won't have to be embarrassed whether you felt you knew something or nothing or a lot. So they'll begin the recording now. You're very free to knit or whatever during the class. If you feel like sort of closing your eyes, we'll just think you're meditating. So, you know, feel free to do that too. Sometimes if you're doing something with your hands, it's, for many people, it's easier to listen. So we will be giving you handouts, so you won't have to worry about trying to take copious notes. And that'll help you too. And these recordings, they're being recorded right now, so they are available to you. So sometimes when you're trying to take notes and listen, it's hard. So we hope you feel relaxed in that and that you're comfortable with that. We got special permission to light these candles while we're here. Now you notice that there's branches near the candles, and anybody sitting right over there, keep an eye on the branches, please. They're very fresh and the candles are far enough away. We don't think there'll be a problem, but if you would watch that, please. We said yesterday when we were introducing the class in our overview that we would generally follow this format. We'll give you some input about Francis and Claire, some aspect of that to begin the class. That'll be about the first half an hour or so. Then you'll have an opportunity to have some discussion together around a very focused topic so that you'll have the input to go on, and then you can make it real in your lives. One of the things that is true about Franciscan spirituality, as one theologian put it, it's not Franciscan unless you can have lunch with it. Now, basically what that means is it's not simply, it is an intellectual tradition, but it's incarnational as well. So it's got to come down and filter into our lives. It already has, because I'm sure 100% of you here have seen Francis in the bird bath and have seen Francis with animals and have some familiarity, most of you, with the prayer of St. Francis, the Lord make me an instrument of your peace. So we have that, and that's a strong basis. But it's got to make sense in our lives in order for it to truly capture us. And then we're going to give you a suggestion to take with you for the day of some way you might continue your reflection on that. And that will be the general format that we'll have in our class structure.
A very quick overview of the week. It's also listed on the board outside, so I'm not going to spend much time on it, but just to let you know that today is an overview of Francis and Claire, as well as the core principles that we will be looking at the for the rest of the week. Tomorrow, we're going to look at humility. And then on Wednesday, we're going to look at what it means to be brother and sister to one another and to all of creation. On Thursday, we're going to explore what it means to be peacemakers. And on Friday, we're going to talk about joy, and it's going to be a surprise.
To us, too. We'll figure out Friday after we've been through these 4 days. So, I'd like to begin by giving you this handout. And I believe there is enough for everyone to take one, including those who are just visiting us today. This handout has two sides. On one side is an overview of the life of Francis and Claire, and on the other side are the core principles, which are our two main topics today. While those are being passed around, you know, in Francis and Claire's day, which was the 13th century, they didn't have Polaroid cameras. They didn't have digital cameras. All they had was good painters. And that is how they learned. This is before the invention of the printing press. So books were very, very precious and very few. When the monks would pray together, they had one book. So their main way of learning was through paintings and pictures and through listening to the scriptures being proclaimed. So we're going to pass around the statues of Claire and Francis, and don't worry about them, they're pretty sturdy. And you may pick up Francis there. That particular statue of Francis comes from Rome, and it is made of olive wood. This statue of Claire actually comes from Assisi, and it's plaster, though it feels like wood. They're both gifts, that from my older sister and that from one of my good friends. To just give you a sense of a modern picture of what and how they may look. We'll also pass around this magazine. This picture of Francis is Cimabue, the painter Cimabue's portrayal of Francis. This is probably the most famous picture of Francis that most authentically portrays what he looked like. In Thomas of Celano's Life of Francis, and he was one of the first ones to write a life of Francis, he describes Francis, and Cimabue tried to paint Francis according to that description. A very short little man, probably not more than 4 feet tall. Very broad, big eyes. And we'll pass this around so you get a chance to see it. He looks a little gaunt. He was. Because in his day and time, it was tradition among Christians that fasting and mortification were very important. So he wasn't very good to his body. Neither was Claire. And in fact, both at the end of their lives, they apologized to their bodies for not taking good care of them. They both died mostly and were ill quite often because of their fasting and mortification. You're free also to look through the magazine, there's lots more pictures in there. It's not that they were, you know, set out to be named St. Francis and St. Clair. That was just the common practice of the day. They were not, most people fasted, most people had practices of mortification. That's just how you did it in those days. So, you know, though we may look at it and say, they were nuts. Well, you know, to be a saint, you sort of have to be nuts. So we're all a little crazy somewhere along the line. And you know, 800 years from now, which is about how long it is since they were alive, they're going to look back at the 21st century and say, those people were nuts. Because, that's true, we probably already know it. Because in time, over time, we evolve as a human race. So hopefully we do get better and we do get smarter. But we're talking about persons who lived in the 13th century for the most part. Now, the Protestant Reformation had not happened. They did not know when they used the word Catholic, which was the common word associated with Christians, it was meant to be the universal church. If you were a follower of Christ, you were called Catholic, you were called Christian. So Francis didn't know anything about the Protestant Reformation. And also, Francis believed, and so did Claire, that the heart of the message of Christ was to follow the gospel. The church of Francis and Claire's day was in very poor shape. Very poor shape. There was all kinds of bad things going on. The church had a lot of money. That's what it sounds like today. Church had a lot of money. The church had a lot of land. The church had a lot of very hierarchical kinds of structures and a lot. There were only two classes, the nobility and the poor. There was nothing else. So you were either very rich or you were very poor. Now, wasn't the people of his day, that day, didn't know more. This was their experience. And it wasn't that the popes and the bishops and the priests of the day were trying to not follow what they thought was right. They were. But Francis saw it differently. And so did Claire, that it was time for reform. Much like in the Protestant Reformation, much like Luther and many others looked at the church and said, it's time for reform. It's time. We've got to do something. So we're in this thing together, basically, is what I'm saying. We didn't have time before class today to go sort of get to the library here and look in the art books, etc., and other books for what might be here about Francis. So we're going to do that today, we hope, and bring a few more resources in here so that you can see those. We do have a book in the bookstore and other books that we'd like to tell you about before we go on.
Francis, the Journey and the Dream. There are, I think, around 10 to 15 copies of this in the bookstore. This is a very good introduction, very accessible reading of Francis and his interpretation of the gospel in the context of his time. It doesn't cover Claire as succinctly as Francis. Very good book. A book that we tried to get into the bookstore, it didn't happen because it comes from Ireland. Through the Veils of Mourning. This is the book that we drew the core principles from that we will be speaking of, and it formed the outline of our week. I'll leave this book here. You're welcome to look through it. That's fine. There are many books in the Holden bookstore that we encourage you to peruse because in several different sections of the Holden bookstore, it touches on, they intersect, the topics intersect with what is true of Franciscan spirituality. Care for the earth, reverence for all people, issues of justice, and restoration of all of creation. Even books about our own sexuality and those issues, talking about who we are as created in the image of God, all of those connect with Franciscan spirituality. In particular, we came upon this one called Earth's Echo, Sacred Encounters with Nature. Neither Mary Jo or I have read this, but it looked like something that might be a keeper. And then one more resource that I'd like to point out to you is a resource actually that I have written with the help of Barbara Bridge, who has written some responses. It's called Hearts Extended, Scripture Readings, Intercessions for the Church Year. The reason that I'm pointing this particular resource out, which is very good for faith-sharing groups, for parish groups, can be used in retreat work, those sorts of things, is that I draw heavily upon Franciscan themes in this. And in fact, the theme song that we will be singing throughout this week comes out of this book. So if this is something that is of interest to you, this is in the bookstore as well.
That bookstore, if you haven't gotten there yet, is a gold mine as far, and I mean that in the best sense of the word, copper mine in the best sense of the word, because it is such a rich resource. You could get lost in there, and you know, just, and besides the books, the pottery, and the clothing, and the things that are there from the third world countries that they do fair share with, it's a marvelous thing. So be sure you, if you haven't been to Holden before and haven't been there, to make it a point. So I'm going to ask you to stand. And going to make a circle, and as we make a circle turning around, Gloria is going to lead us in good morning again. Good morning. Happening in the world at the time. That's what the three columns are. And I think sometimes when we think of saints or Jesus, we sort of forget they lived in another century, in another time. So I divided this into about 10 years or so in each column, except for the last one when Claire is alive and Francis has died. I put a few more years together there. This is a very, very broad overview. I could go on for a long time, but you know, we can't stay here for 3 months, so I just tried to pick up just some major pieces. And any of the reading you do, G.K. Chesterton's Life of St. Francis is a classic. It's a wonderful Life of St. Francis. He really gets in there and gives us a view of St. Francis that perhaps you won't find in many books. Francis was born to Pietro and Pica Bernardoni. His name when he was born was not Francis, it was Giovanni, John. His father, Pietro, was away in France buying cloth when he was born. Pica was born in France and she named him Giovanni. When his father, Pietro, got back, he was so enthralled with France, he said, "We're not going to call him Giovanni. His name is Francesco." That's how he got his name. He probably, we think, had one other brother, but that was probably all there were in the family. Now, they belonged to what was called the merchant class. There was no strong merchant class. It was an evolving class. It was mostly nobility and poor. But then we had people, because travel was becoming possible, we had people like Pietro who could get to France and buy cloth and sell it. So that was just beginning. So Pietro was on his way up to becoming a very wealthy man and really wanted that as a matter of pride. As a matter of becoming more than poor. They were not born noble, but they weren't born poor either. So this is kind of like a new class was evolving in the Middle Ages at that time. Now, Francis is born in about 1182. These years are approximate because remember, they're not writing history books. They don't have books. So when they remember this, you know, it's sort of, well, maybe it was around that time. Didn't have birth certificates. So, you know, we make a good guess. We know it was about 1182. Well, in that year, Claire was not born. She was still in the mind of God. She was much younger than Frances. And in the world, they were just beginning to put glass windows in homes. Just beginning. And the University of Paris was founded. It's a very different world these people are living in. Between 1190 and 1200, Francis was a young boy, and he was attending school. The schools were always a part of the churches. So he was in the church in Assisi called San Giorgio. He was probably learning Latin. He was probably learning a little bit about how to read. And he was probably learning some French from his mother. And of course, he spoke Italian. So he did have some language development and some reading. About 1193, Claire is born. She's about 11 or 12 years younger than Francis. There's a difference, though. Claire is born into nobility. She is born to Favaroni and Ortolano or Rivadeccio. Very Italian. I'm Portuguese, so you know I do use my hands a lot. I don't know a lot of Italian. But her mother, Ortolano, that name means gardener. We don't know a lot about her father, except that he had a lot of brothers, so Claire had a lot of uncles, and that he was of the Crusades and was a knight. We don't have much about him. He probably died early in Claire's life. We know a lot about her uncles, but we don't know much about Valeroni. Childbirth in those days was very dangerous, and very often neither the mother or the child died. So these women who were pregnant would often go on pilgrimage to some saint's shrine to pray for safe birth. So Ortolano went to the shrine of St. Michael to pray that Claire would be born safely. And she had an inspiration there that her daughter, that the child to be born, was to be named Chiara. That's Italian for Claire. So if you go to Assisi, the church of St. Clare is Santa Chiara. And Chiara means light. So this man who wrote this Journey in the Dream, Murray Bodo, he writes in a very poetic form. This book here, would you hold it up for me? Also has written a book called Claire, Light in the Garden. That is not in the bookstore, but that's another wonderful resource. Any of these can be found on the internet. So in the world, we have the Crusades going on, we have famine in Europe, and we have another crusade being announced. It was very, you were out to save the world, you joined the Crusades. So about 1202, in the next time space, Francis goes to war against Perugia. Perugia was a neighboring village, and villages often were at war with each other. And Perugia and Assisi were often at war with each other. A lot of odds there. So Francis was out to be a knight. He was a very strong, young man. He was going to war. He was fighting for Christ. And he gets imprisoned. And he spends a whole year in prison. His father is very upset about this because this is his oldest son. He's an Italian. His oldest son is in prison in Perugia. So he uses his money to get him out. So he gets all the Assisians out, and Francis comes back. But after spending a year in prison, and the conditions were very poor, he's not very well, and he's sick for an entire year. His mother is doing a lot of nursing of him. Around that time, Claire is born. We think, she's born in 1193, so about 1202 to 1205, somewhere in there, because things are not safe in Assisi and Perugia is advancing on Assisi, Claire and her family have the means to go live in exile. So she's hardly there. So their whole family has to go elsewhere. Then we come to a very big change in Francis's life. In 1205, at around the age of 23, that's what those numbers are, I tried to calculate those ages, A gradual conversion begins for Francis. And he isn't the jovial, you know, party man that he was in his teens. And he begins to give very generously to the poor. Now remember, this is after a long illness. And he's beginning to say, there's something different here that I need to do. Well, this is making his father very mad. Because this is his oldest son who's supposed to take up his trade. This is his oldest son who's supposed to be the one who follows him. That's not bad. But he wanted his son to do what he was doing. I'm sure some of you can identify with that. It was very important in those days. Family was everything. Everything. So, Francis, in about 1205, goes to the church of San Damiano, St. Damian. It's in the foothills of Assisi. And he's praying before the crucifix there. And what he hears is, deep within him, Francis, go rebuild my church, my home. It's falling into ruin. And literally, the church was falling into ruin. There was hardly a stone upon a stone. That was true of many churches of Francis' day. Francis goes, he's not given up everything yet. He goes to his father's cloth house shop. His father is away in France getting more cloth, and he gives it away. Yeah. Father comes home. Now imagine how you would feel. And there's nothing left in the shop. It's all given away. The father decides, this son of mine is nuts. He puts him in prison, in a sense, in his own house. He says, you know, it's sort of like you put the kid in the room and say, now stay there until you get some sense.
Time out.
Time out. Then Pietro figures this will solve it. He has to go back to France. Pica lets him out of prison. His mother lets him out. That's why you see in Assisi the statue of France of Pietro and Pica, and Pica's holding some chains because she unchained the door and let Francis out. She somehow got the vision. She knew she'd be in trouble when Pietro got home, but she figured she'd come. So, 1206, at the age of 24, now think about what you were doing at 24. Francis decides that he can't reconcile the life that he knew with the life he was called to. He couldn't reconcile it. His father couldn't reconcile it either. And so there was a split. And that's the scene you often hear about, where Francis literally takes everything off and says, I have no father but God in heaven. Now, that was extremely difficult for father and son, and for mother too. The bishop clothes Francis in a hermit sort of robe, a poor robe, and Francis goes off. Had nothing. And he went around scratching his head saying, now what, God? Have you ever had that feeling? Now what? Now what? He loved his family. His father and mother loved him. They were good people. And so was Francis. But there was a parting of the ways here. Claire now is only about 12 at this time that Francis renounces.
her father, his father. Claire has lived a very protective life in her home. The women in those days didn't go out much. But her mother was a very strong contributor to the poor. Her mother really believed in helping the poor. So Claire, as a child, would often accompany her mother out giving food to the poor, especially the lepers, who were not allowed in the city because they didn't know how leprosy was contracted. So if you were a leper, you went around with a bell, ringing the bell. And no, you were considered dead if you were a leper. And you lived in the garbage dump. But Claire and her mother would often go out and give food to the lepers. So Claire knew about this. She knew about this poor, and she prayed all of her life. So she probably wasn't in the square the day that Francis gave up all his clothes, because the women weren't around in the square in those days. But we think that her home, Claire's home, was, as far as we know, is pretty much right on the square. So she was probably watching all of this going on, even though she's only 12. Well, Francis goes on, and he begins to preach. He begins to get these brothers that were following him, so they've got to find a place to live, because these men, now they're following him. He must have been very charismatic. And he must have been a good Italian. He must have been a wonderful Italian. You know how they attract you, these Italians? They just... Oh, it's just delicious to be in Assisi or Italy. They're just wonderful people to be around. Well, his friends are starting to follow him, so to find a home. So they decide they're going to go preach in Assisi. A dangerous thing to do. But he goes anyway. They threw a lot of tomatoes at him in those days. But Claire hears this. Now she's about 17 or so. She hears Francis preach. Claire is a beautiful, tall, stately woman. At 17, it was time to get married. Remember, she's of the nobility. In those days, it was very important to be married. And everyone was married. If you didn't get married, you were pretty much at the mercy of the people, because you had no way to support yourself. But Claire and Francis, between about 1210 and 1212, Francis has an entourage of women that go with her when they go out, and Claire, Francis by this time has some brothers, and they meet. And a vision stirs. And, you know, it's sort of like, and you've mentioned this a number of times, and many of you have your spouses here. It's like when you met your soulmate. It's like when you met the person that you knew you were meant to be with. John O'Donohue, in the book Anam Cara, describes it this way. He says, Anam Cara means soulmate in Celtic language. It's like before the universe was created, there was this one big mass of clay, and it was all connected. The universe is created, and the clay breaks apart. And when you meet your soulmate, it's like finding the piece of clay that was next to you. That's what it was like with Claire and Francis. Now, they weren't lovers, they weren't married, but they were soulmates. And Francis, or Claire began to say, oh, this is it. This is it. This is how I know I'm called to live. She is 17. Her uncles are out to get her married. Lots of young men are very interested in her. She's rich. And so are they. What does Claire do? 19 years old, 12, she has already, without her parents' knowledge, given her dowry away. She gave it away. Number one, no, you don't give the dowry away. She has two sisters as well, but she's given it all away to the poor. And she knows that for to be true to herself, She has to be a part of Frances's movement. She's got to join it. She doesn't want to be in the monastery like the Sisters of her day. In those days, you brought your diary with you. And that's how the monasteries were supported, because women didn't support themselves in those days. That was okay. I mean, that was the times. But Claire had given it all away. At midnight on Palm Sunday, the bishop knows about this. The bishop of Assisi at the time is very understanding. And Francis and the brothers know. Midnight on Palm Sunday, Claire leaves her home. Everything. How do you think Mom and Dad felt the next morning?
Not very good.
The daughter's gone, and so is her dowry. You know, it'd be like coming home and there's nothing left in the house. But the courage of this young woman, she's 19. She goes to a little church outside of Assisi called the Porzioncola, the little portion of the church, another one that Francis had prepared. Francis cuts her hair. If you cut your hair in those days, that was a symbol that you were going to remain a virgin. You're probably going to enter a convent, because you didn't remain a virgin unless you did. And Francis takes her to a Benedictine monastery where he knew she would be safe, because he knew the uncles would be after her very soon. Claire was tremendously courageous. And Francis received Claire into his order. A little bit unknown in his day. A little bit unknown in this day. But she just wanted to follow him.
What did you say? She what?
She became a part of his order.
Okay.
She eventually founded her own, but he received her as one of his followers. Everything's gone. Her hair is gone. She's dressed poorly. Her uncle's come after her. We're getting her out of here. She's nuts. They go to the convent, which they know where she is, and Claire simply takes off her veil and shows them her hair, and she's in the sanctuary of the church. They can't take her. She's safe there. Eventually, her sister joins her. Eventually, her other sister joins her, and eventually her mother joins her.
Wow.
So the uncles are all scratching their heads. What happened here? Anyway, she's a very strong woman. At the age of 22, 12, 15, she receives the title of abbess. That is, she was to be the head of her community. They're living now at San Damiano, the church of San Damiano. She never wanted to be the abbess. All she wanted was that her sisters live in mutual charity and that they make a living for themselves, that they not be supported by the dowries. So noble women joined her, poor women joined her, they all joined her. They all, sort of like Francis and Claire, Claire said, everybody come! Anybody that wants to follow the gospel, come! Got in a lot of trouble with the church, but that's what they said. So that's what happened then. And then in 1216, Claire receives the privilege of poverty. Now that's a little hard to understand. Claire didn't want to own any property. Neither did Francis. She didn't want to own any property. They wanted to have nothing so that everything they had was a gift. Everything. That for Claire was the privilege of poverty. It wasn't, you know, living and groveling in the dirt or having nothing, but everything that they had was a gift. Claire really got that. Francis did too, but Claire really lived that. In 1217, Francis by this time has about, he's 36, has about 5,000 followers. Grew rather rapidly. And so he convenes what's called the Chapter of Mats. He brings all the brothers together. But then by about 1220, there's a lot of ideas on how you ought to do this, Franciscan style, and so there's a lot of contention in the order. So Francis turns the order over and says, I can't lead you anymore. It was very hard for Francis to do that. Then in 1221, the church tells Francis he's got to write a rule. It can't be just that to follow the footprints of Jesus through the gospel. The church says, you got to write more than that. And he's got, you know, thousands of these brothers. They said, we need to know how to do this. So he tries to write a rule. That rule was never found. It was lost. Because the brothers looked at it and said, this is too hard. So they told him to go back and write another one. So in 1223 he did. He wrote another rule. And then in 1225, Claire in the meantime, you know, was keeping up her monastery. In 1224, Francis, at the age of 42, receives the stigmata. That means that the wound, he received the wounds of Christ in his hands and his side and his feet. Interesting enough, in the same year, Claire, at the age of 31, becomes very seriously ill. And she was ill from then until she died. Very hard. We don't know what that illness was, but she was very sick. Just before that, we have Greccio. I don't have this down there, but in 1223, when he's writing his rule, Francis decides that it's time to do something about Christmas. So he goes to Greccio. It's a little village on a hillside outside of Assisi. He says, let's reenact the Christmas scene. They didn't have crib sets before that. So he got the animals in there, and he got the baby in there, found somebody that had a baby, and they had a whole Christmas scene. They reenacted it. That is the first Christmas scene, the first crib set. That's the Franciscan tradition. That's why he's on all the Christmas cards. Then, 1225, Francis is very ill. He's very blind. He may even contract leprosy because he spent a long time with the lepers. He goes back to San Damiano to have Claire and her sisters take care of him. At that point, Francis writes his last song. He was a troubadour. He was a singer. And he wrote the Canticle of the Sun. And we're going to be sharing that with you later when we talk about creation. Beautiful, beautiful story, beautiful prayer. Summarizes his whole life, his whole relationship with all of creation. He writes it when he's nearly blind, very sick, and about to die in Claire's monastery. And Claire is there tending to him. Francis dies about 1226, the age of 44. He dies on October 3rd. His feast day is the next day, October 4th. And 2 years later, he's canonized. But he must have been a very strong influence. Claire continues in 1228, the year Francis is canonized. The Pope visits Claire in her monastery. And she works for a lot of years to get her rule approved, because she wanted another rule for her sisters. The church wasn't approving many rules, because there's, the Pope said, and the cardinals, there's enough rules, we don't need any more. Claire wanted to write another one. She's very intelligent. She said, I'll pattern it after Francis's, and then they'll think it's the same one. She got it approved 2 weeks before she died. She died on August 11th. And you can see what's happening in the world on the other side there. Claire dies at the age of 62. She lived a lot longer than Francis. She lived about 18 years longer than Francis. When Francis died, the order, his order, was basically falling apart. If it hadn't been for Claire and her strength, we probably wouldn't have Franciscans today, because she held them together. She was this kind of a strong woman. The Saracens were about to invade the city of Assisi. So they thought they'd start with this monastery of nuns at the bottom of the hill at San Damiano. So they're climbing the walls to get over the walls to plunder the monastery, harm the sisters. Big, burly men. And Claire, her sisters run to Claire, who's sick, and said, what are we going to do? Claire says, we're going to pray. So they go pray. And then the Eucharist was reserved in a tabernacle, more like a box. That's why Claire's pictured up with a a light or a box. Claire takes the Eucharist. She stands at the door with her sisters behind her, and she looks at the Saracens. She doesn't say anything.
Bailey?
You know, she must have had a pretty strong teacher look. You know how you're misbehaving in the classroom and then you get the teacher look? She must have been a commanding presence. They never invaded the Sissy. Never. She's considered the protectress of the Sissy. She did that a couple times. Strong lady she was. But mostly, what we want to give you from this overview is that these two people, their soulmates, these two people both founded the movement that you and I know today as Franciscan.
I feel as if we need to breathe in and breathe out. That was a lot. Rich, rich history. We have about 9 more minutes left in our very first session. I am not going to talk about the core principles that is on the flip side of the sheet of paper, but I do invite you to bring that back with you tomorrow and the following days, because we're going to move from the information here into the topic of the day. So bring that back with you, if you would, please. Mary Jo is going to share what we, our invitation for you today, and then we're going to close with our theme song.
This is the yellow sheet that's coming around. This is called a Sabbath walk. And this is what we encourage you to do today. It's explained pretty well. We want you, in the midst of this busy schedule we have you on, you can skip some things. You can even get tired of us, you can skip us sometimes if you want. But to take a 30-minute walk. Now, this is a walk with no purpose. Oh my goodness.
Try that on for size.
Just the walk. There's lots of room to walk around here. You can walk by doing that in your mind if you're not physically able to move for a long walk. You can walk around the village, you can walk around the dining room, you can walk the path to the falls, you can look at the rocks, you can do anything. But it's with no purpose. It's simply to see what reveals itself to you about creation. Because the common element that came out here was that Francis belongs in creation. So when you come back tomorrow, we won't be introducing ourselves again, but we will be asking you to share with each other, what was that walk like?
The theme song is being passed out at this time. It's a litany of peace. And there are verses that are sung at the beginning and then a refrain, make me an instrument of your peace, make me an instrument of your peace. I am going to begin by singing this, and I want you to join in as you are comfortable. And I beg of you, please do not let this become just me singing. I want you to join in, and I want this to become our song for the week. So I invite you to stand. And again, lift your voices. It's a very, very moving song.
God of love, your gift of peace is planted deep within our hearts. May we be an instrument of your
Journey well in creation today, and may the rest of your day be filled with lots of peace and lots of good animals, and probably the deer will come into the village today.
Yes,
safe. Just lots of good things, good art sessions, good rock sessions, whatever God calls to you today. This will be our theme song, so we ask you to be sure and bring back that song every day. And even if you wish to leave it here, that's fine too, if you're afraid you won't remember to bring it back. Go in peace. Good Italians today.